gentlemen, boys and girls, we back. It's your boys locked down. We are here for, well, a pretty big episode, I'd say. We got a lot to talk about today. Don't you agree?
Yes, yeah. We do.
Big Let's stuff going it. On.
A lot of stuff, including news that broke 4 hours ago or so, that the Dallas Mavericks acquired Kristaps Porzingis, Trey Burke, Courtney Lee, and Tim Hardaway Jr. from the Knicks for Dennis Smith Jr., Wesley Matthews, DeAndre Jordan, and two future first-round picks. Gentlemen, what are your thoughts?
Well, see, here's the thing, right? All of Knicks Nation is, like, freaking out right now. I got a little something to tell everybody.
Uh-oh.
Porzingis wasn't going to resign with you guys. You're all dumb. He was going to sign his qualifying offer and then get out of New York. He hated being there. He hated James Dolan. He hated the management. And he was not going to stay. So would you rather be in the Anthony Davis position where your entire franchise is like being little babies about it? And they're just like, we're not going to even listen to trade requests. And it's like, what do you mean? Why not? He's going to leave. I like the move from the Knicks. It depends on the picks, honestly. If they get a pick in this year's draft, because the Mavericks look like they're going to be a lottery team, that's going to be huge because there's a lot of good prospects in this draft.
Mm-hmm.
If it's for like later drafts when the Mavericks are going to be a better like playoff team, it's not going to be as big of a deal. But they did get rid of two pretty big contracts they wanted to get rid of in Hardaway and Courtney Lee. And I mean, they think, according to what I've seen, they believe they can get Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. I don't think they can. I'm going to be honest.
No.
I do think Kyrie is going to leave Boston, unless Boston like makes it to the NBA Finals. But I mean, why would Kyrie like not go to LA? He's already kind of made it clear he wants to play with LeBron if the opportunity arises again. Like, why would someone not go to Brooklyn? Brooklyn's got cap room and they got a bunch of great young talent. Like, why would you not rather go there? I don't know. I mean, again, if they get two first-round picks in this year's draft, they can get Zion Williamson, dude.
Like, fire.
We're talking about – listen, if they get Zion Williamson, this is a different conversation.
Yeah.
Like, completely sure. Different.
They can get Zion and KD.
Yeah. Again, they get, like, a good guard with the Mavs pick if they get it. With their pick, if they get Zion, then they sign KD, and they sign, like, Kemba Walker. Like, oh, my gosh, this is the best move of all time. but I don't think that's going to happen, to be honest. I think in Knicks fashion, they're going to get like the fifth pick and get like Cam Reddish from Duke, who I think is still really good. But I don't think it's going to go down that way. But we'll see, man. I don't know. We'll see what the picks are, because that's what the trade's going to come down to. But the Mavs, oh boy. They got some good talent now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, Porzingis and Doncic together, when Porzingis gets healthy, that could be a lethal duo right there. But, I mean, for both sides, I mean, it's really an interesting trade because, to me, it's like it's risky for both sides because the Mavericks could be taking on a guy that we don't know how healthy he's going to be when he comes back. Is he going to be better than he was before? Is he not going to be as good as he was before? And so giving up all that talent that they gave up, DeAndre Jordan, Wes Matthews, Dennis Smith, who they like just drafted with, what, the 7th overall pick a couple years ago? And 2 first-round picks? That could be giving up a lot just for a guy who may not be as good as advertised.
And
some role players that are going to be free agents.
And he's going to be an unrestricted free agent after next year. So if it doesn't go like according to plan next year, Kristaps can bolt and the Mavs have no first-round picks.
Right. Now, on the other hand, for the Knicks, they're giving up a guy like with Kristaps who could be amazing, and they're only getting basically Dennis Smith and 2 first round picks, because they're probably going to buy out DeAndre Jordan and Wes Matthews since they're on expiring contracts and they want to be terrible this year.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, to me, it's like it's kind of a bad sign for the Knicks in a way, because not only did Kristaps want to leave, Melo wanted to leave, their star players that they've had have wanted to leave because of the ownership there. There's been no trust between them. So is that really an enticing place for free agents to come and play?
Exactly, yeah. Why would anyone want to play for James Dolan?
Yeah.
Like, I understand guys like Noah Vonleh, who can like kind of resurrect their career. He's having a pretty good year with New York this year. But like a guy like Katie, like, come on, man. Like, why would he want to go to? Why would he want to go to the Knicks?
And I mean, they've had no playoff success in the last. I think I heard in the last 19 years, they've only won one playoff series.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
19 years.
But listen, actually, I just thought of something. You know why Kevin Durant might want to go to the Knicks? Kevin Durant is a big Twitter guy. He's always on social media. He's calling out like
burners.
Max Kellerman. He's calling out Stephen A. Smith. You know what would shut up like every critic about his move to Golden State? If he goes to the Knicks, and if he wins them a title, that would shut everyone up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Fair. That'd be crazy.
He goes from a guy who, like, I don't think anyone really considers him to be, like, an all-time great anymore. Like, if he had won a title in OKC, he would have been. But, you know, that kind of sullied his legacy going to Golden State. If he goes to, like, New York and wins a title there, he's back, like, just under LeBron. Like, top 20 of all time type guy. Like, so...
I mean, he already has a strong legacy. Anyway, I mean, he's got two NBA Finals MVPs and stuff. But if he has his own team, he's the main guy. I mean, he's still kind of – I mean, he's the best player on the Warriors still. But if he goes to the Warriors, but they don't have as much talent – the Knicks, when they don't have much talent, and takes them to the NBA Finals and wins it like LeBron did with the Cavs who had nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's saying something. So it'd be interesting.
Doesn't like Robert Horry have like six titles or something like that?
I thought he had more.
He's got some.
He had like eight or nine.
All I'm just saying is like the amount of titles you have doesn't matter. Like
MVP.
Like it doesn't really matter. Like he can win. He could go and get 28 free rings with Golden State, and it won't mean as much as the one that LeBron won in Cleveland. But that's the reality. That's the reality of it.
Yeah.
Look, man, I love it for New York, actually. I'm really happy for the entire state as a whole. But, I mean, like, the fact that they were able to clear all this cap space to go after somebody like Tobias Harris, like, I'm stoked. I'm not going to lie.
Tobias is a free agent. I forgot about that.
Huh. And they're totally going to go after him. You know they are.
Oh,
shit. $71 million.
That's a really good point because that's a guy who – okay.
They got a ton of cap space in summer.
I'm just saying.
Like Kim Walker, and they get some like early draft picks. That's a team, man. That's a squad.
I'm just saying. I know.
It's gonna be a fun off season.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Why
could be a free agent?
MLB off season.
And Klay Thompson could be an unrestricted free agent too.
Yeah, and Kyrie.
You think he's gonna leave?
I think the Warriors have to make a decision. I think they're gonna pay Klay Thompson. They're going to give him the max, and they'll be like, all right, KD, you got to get out of here. Mm-hmm. If they, for some reason, offer KD the max over Klay Thompson, I would be shocked. But if they do, man, that makes free agency for me a lot more entertaining. Mm-hmm. Because Klay could go to the Lakers. He could go to the Knicks. There's a lot of places Klay could go, and it makes him like an instant contender pretty much.
Yeah, I think if Klay leaves Golden State, I don't see him going anywhere but L.A.
Yeah, L.A.'s – that's a great landing spot for him. But to play with LeBron, you kidding me?
Yeah, who doesn't want to do that?
Yeah. That's fair. Yeah. So, yeah, basketball is – I mean, it's been heating up, but it's slowly getting hotter and hotter, especially as football comes to a close this week. And do you think – like, here's my – I have this, like, conspiracy theory. Do you think that the NBA is just a little bit butthurt that it's been all NFL talk all week? And they're like, hey, let's make something happen. Boom, on the Thursday before the Super Bowl, this huge blockbuster deal. And then, like, I don't know, like, Bryce Harper will probably sign with, like, the Padres tomorrow. And it'll be like, what is football anymore? Dude, listen, the Padres are – they're going hard after Bryce Harper. He's going to Philly. He's so going to Philly. But I'm just saying, other sports leagues are – they have to be a little upset right now. That
I mean, this happens every year anyway. Let's get used to it.
I saw a tweet on Twitter like 30 minutes ago that said it would be the ultimate power move for the NBA to move the trade deadline to Super Bowl Sunday.
It's not that far after.
It'd be awesome. But hey, speaking of undershadowed leagues, let's move away from the NBA. We're going to go into some football talk.
We actually have not talked about the NFL since the Saints were absolutely cheated out of a Super Bowl berth.
Let's talk about that real quick. Yeah, Matt, what were your quick thoughts on
Quick just, thoughts, man. Yeah. I feel bad for everybody that's a New Orleans fan. Listen, I'm a Panthers fan. So, like, my natural rival is New Orleans. And that happened, and I was just sitting there, and I'm like, this sucks.
Yeah.
Like, they should be in the Super Bowl, man. You take three knees, kick a field goal, the game's over. Damn, man. That's
– didn't they have the lead? They were up 23-20.
It was a tie.
I'm quite sure. Because then Greg Zuerlein drove down the field – and got a field goal.
Right. They ended up, yeah, they got.
Well, the Rams did. And he
it
got
was a tie game with like a minute and 40 seconds left.
Mm-hmm.
And then that should have been pass interference. And they would have been able to just kneel the ball three times, kick a field goal to win the game, 23-20. Instead, they were forced to kick a field goal, like I said, with a minute and 40 seconds left, which allowed Jared Goff to march him down. And man, Greg DeLeg, what a game. Nobody talked about it. Like, Everyone talked about the Eagles. What was it? The Bears kicker that missed the field goal. Cody, I think
the double doinker.
The double doinker. But like, Greg Zuerlein hit three huge field goals, which is the reason why the Rams are even in the Super Bowl. Huge kicks, like
let alone a 57-yarder to win the game. 57-yarder.
He
even said his name. It was just like C.J. Anderson, Jared Goff, Sean McVay, and I'm like, what about the guy who got him there, idiot? he's gonna miss one field goal in the Super Bowl, and everyone's gonna say he's the reason why they lost. And it's like, this is the dumbest sport of all time.
Yeah. True.
Greg Zero. I mean, again, it was a fantastic weekend of games, but that leads into another discussion where the NFL, and a lot of the owners, GMs, they've been talking about instigating or starting a new rule about being able to review, penalties. And some of the ones that have caught fire, that have caught traction, involve plays on the ball, like down the field. So you can't just like challenge points, limiting it to the last 2 minutes of games, things like that. But even so, I think there's a much easier way to deal with this. What you do is during the entirety of a game, just like a challenge, you give each team one penalty challenge.
Okay.
Where you can use it at any point in the game. If they fail, they lose like a timeout, whatever, just like a normal challenge.
That's
right.
Fair.
Normal challenge. What's going to happen the majority of the time is no team's going to use the flag because they're going to be like, what if I use it now? And then in the fourth quarter, something horrible happens and we lose because of it.
Right.
You're not going to use
choice.
You're not going to use it on a hands to the face in the first quarter because then you're going to screw your own team in the fourth quarter when something blatant happens and you don't have a challenge. So what's going to happen is 90% of the time you're not even going to get a shot to use the flag because nothing's going to happen that big at the end of the game, and it's going to be like, well, I was saving it for the end. And it's not going to slow the game down. It's going to be a quick, you can quickly look at it. It's not going to hurt the integrity of the game. A big thing I've heard is that it's going to open Pandora's box. As long as you just give them one, giving coaches the ability to challenge plays didn't do anything wrong. It made the game better, you know, because refs make mistakes. And so just giving them one challenge a game, it's not going to slow the game down. It's going to slow the game down by like a minute, if that, if they even can use it. Because like I said before, it may make more sense at the end of the day to just not use it because of the way that the game plays out.
It's more important for them to get it right than anything. It doesn't matter the time. It's get the call right.
Exactly. Exactly. So you don't want something like that to happen. You want at least something in place to where you could say, well, the coach should have been able to. Like, so like, for instance, that's going to be another thing that coaches have to take care of and monitor, right? So like if Sean Payton had used his challenge earlier in the game, there would have been no talk about the missed call because it would have been about Sean Payton had misused his challenge. It would have been a poor coaching decision if he didn't have the flag, as opposed to us talking about referees for 2 weeks. So, I mean, again, I hate this. We shouldn't be talking about referees for 2 weeks. I think just give each team one challenge a game to challenge a flag or like a no, or basically to essentially challenge a play. Be like, I saw something on this play that was not called, and then you go back and you look at it to see if you know the coach challenged or the coach saw the right thing. I don't think it's the most complicated thing in the world. I think there's an easy fix, and I think that would fix it.
That's fair. Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Gritty.
Yeah. So my idea for a rule change isn't based on penalties, Mine's more of a change that I'd like to see in the overtime rules, not only for the playoffs, but for the regular season. I kind of like the way that the college football does it, where they start, I mean, both teams have a chance to score. So in the NFL, if they score a touchdown or a defensive score of any sort on the first play, the game's over. The other team doesn't get a chance. That's what happened with New England against Kansas City. They scored, marched down the field. Kansas City had no chance. So I'm thinking, you know, it may be if they start the offense at midfield, don't start them at the 25 like they do in college, because kickers they're pros. They're going to make that field goal. Yeah. Start at the 50, okay, and you have an opportunity to go down the field and score. And if you don't, or if you do, whatever, then the other team still, no matter what, has a chance to go down and has to either match that score or, you know, beat them. And if they tie, just keep going, you know?
So for postseason and for playoff time, I'd agree with you. Mm-hmm. I think for regular season, because a big problem is with, like, player safety and all this different stuff, I think for a regular season that might become kind of an issue when you get to, like, big offensive teams that have no defense. Like two teams, like I don't really know a great example of two horribly defensive teams, like the Dolphins and then somebody else, who just like literally couldn't stop the. There you go, yeah, Dolphins and the Bucks, right? Literally couldn't stop anybody. Let's say both teams are healthy, that game could go like 5 hours
easily.
I mean, they could also go to a limit too. Like if you go three overtimes and you're still tied, that's it, tie game. Mm-hmm. You have three tries, you're done.
Yeah, like I said, for postseason, I like the idea because you mm-hmm. Again, what did we pay to see? What did we watch the game to see? Kansas City's defense.
You want to see somebody win. Are too.
Yeah, but we didn't watch the game to see D Ford. You know what I mean? That's not why we watched the game. We watched the game because we wanted to see Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
That's why we watched the game. And in the biggest stage, the game was essentially decided because of a coin flip.
Exactly. That's what I don't want to see.
Whoever got the ball would have won. Let's just be real. Right? The Patriots at that point were not stopping Pat Mahomes, and the Chiefs weren't stopping Tom Brady. Mm-hmm. Who got the ball there was going to win the game. That's the truth. That's the reality.
And that's kind of like with that overtime rule though that I had, like, you know, he would have a chance. He would have a chance to go down the field. You know, people pay to watch him play. And if he doesn't have a chance in overtime in the AFC Championship to take that team to the Super Bowl, I don't know. I just think it'd be cool. I don't see it happening in a few years, but
yeah,
I don't know. I think it'd be interesting.
I think so too. But yeah.
Those are great points. Well, here's the thing. I agree with Chris. That's where I stand. No, you guys made fair points. And personally, I just like drama, so I'm okay with the NFL right now. And if they didn't want to change anything, which they won't, I'm happy because I just think it's funny. Okay, here's the thing. I feel for New Orleans fans. I really do. Like, I don't hate. That? I do. I feel for them. But I just want to make something known really quick before we move on. The better team still won. I think we can all.
Well, I completely disagree.
Oh, do you? Well, I'm gonna keep talking because I haven't talked in a few minutes. But I think the better team still won. I don't see a problem with overtime. I don't see a problem with. Well, let me rephrase that. I do have a huge problem with overtime. I love the college football overtime. Yes, Matt made a good point. Player safety would come into it, become an issue, in knowing the NFL, so would like. If it was a 1 o'clock game that went to like sixth overtime and it's like 5 o'clock, that's going to be an issue, especially if it's like a Fox game and there's like, you know, like the Cowboys Eagles are on at four. The NFL is going to have a problem with that. So yeah, postseason makes sense. Regular season, I'm sure they could find other ways that go around it. But yeah, I going back to what I said before, this is going to sound harsh. I fully expect getting smoke from this if you want to throw it at me. But I think if you had a problem with the play call, you just suck it up and score? ? Like, maybe if Sean Payton spent less time complaining to the referees and more time focusing on what's going on in the field, they would have done something about it. That sounds really harsh. I don't hate you, New Orleans, but I don't know. That's just the one thing I noticed watching that game. Like, that was my biggest problem, my biggest gripe. Yes, it sucked. Yes. That was a bad call on the field. That was a horrible call on the field. While I laughed in the moment because of how bad it was,
everybody did.
I did feel for like the, especially because it's the second year in a row where something bad has happened in New Orleans in the play in the conference championship game with the Minnesota Miracle happening last year. And like, I'm such
a fool.
It's bad, dude. So I don't want to sound like a dick. I'm sorry, but I don't know. Like, what, like, I hate to compare. I don't like to compare, but what would have like Bill Belichick done in the moment? That's a serious question. Like, what do you think he would have done in the moment?
I mean, he would have continued to coach and then they probably would have won because, mm-hmm. the Patriots, again, the Saints got the ball first in overtime.
Yeah. Fair. I was going to mention that. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels, Tom Brady, he would have got together, but like, it's fine. It's time to be got this, dude. We're going to call these plays. We practice this all the time. You got Tom go win this game and then Tom will go win the game. Now, listen, that's a fair point. You know what I mean? They still could have won the game. They had the ball first in overtime. They could have stopped
Agreed.
The Rams.
Yeah.
They could have stopped the Rams. They essentially scored twice. They got the ball down into field goal range twice. So I agree with you. But, you know, that doesn't negate the fact that this was probably the worst call in the history of, like,
Easily.
Professional sports.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like, there's no call that I could think of that's any worse. Like, when people think of, like, the refs changing the outcome of a game, this is going to be the number one call anyone thinks
Absolutely.
Of.
Absolutely.
I mean, there were two missed calls on the same play.
Yeah,
there was
exactly.
a helmet to helmet because he basically spearheaded the dude and a pass interference. They missed them both.
So, like, under, like, every other normal circumstance, I would agree with you, Zach. You know, I think everyone's, like, really quick to, like, complain about things like the refs and
– Sure.
You know what I mean? Because they can control your own
destiny. It's easy. Yeah,
it's easy. You know, the Saints could have won the game. They still had a chance to win. But this was, like, the worst call I've ever seen in my life. And I think
and like, what normal human being would not – like, Bill Belichick is a robot. It's the first thing we should say. Yeah, but what absolutely. Normal human being would not – free? Like, I would have, like, lost my ish in the moment. I would have, like, quit my job.
Oh, my gosh,
job.
Yeah.
I mean, even if you're not a football fan, if you have no idea what football is, you would see that and you'd be like,
any
okay,
normal
something's
human
wrong
being
would
have been like, what the hell was that, you know? Like,
the dude just spearheaded him. Is there something wrong with that?
So it's and so there was reports that came out. We're going to move on. We got a lot to talk about after this, but that's the last point that I want to make personally. But there were reports that came out that I couldn't tell you what four referees, but there were four referees in the game that in their past had ties to the city of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
if you watched the referee that called it a no call, he called it an incomplete pass. And as the referee coming up on his left was running up to throw a flag, he waved his hands in his direction saying, no, no flag, before they could even talk about it not being a flag. That was interesting for me. It's like, what was that? You know?
Remember,
you guys notice that?
I think it was – I don't remember who it was. I think it might have been Randy Moss. It might have been – I don't remember. Somebody on Undisputed. And he actually brought this up, and then I went and I looked it up, and I started watching it. And, man, it looked sketchy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be honest, man. Like, it looks like – they knew it was a flag, and they were like, well, it's not. They're going to say that the refs decided the game, so let's not throw that. And then it was like, why? Well, you decided the game by not throwing it, though.
Either way, you're screwed. Like,
you know,
it's crazy. So, like, and a friend of mine made a point that in the world of MMA and UFC, you know, all that, that if you want to win the fight, don't give it to the hand of the judges. But I agree. I did agree with that at first. Listen, I still do agree with it. Like it's a vague statement because I personally have said it multiple times after the first week after it happened. But like, hey, like they should have scored more, right? And that's such like an immature and vague thing to say because there's so much more that goes into the game. I'm like almost correcting I'm TED talking myself right now.
No,
but,
sure. But in the first possession, they forced a turnover,
right?
And then they could convert in the red zone.
Right.
They failed to convert in the red zone twice in the first half.
Yeah.
If they convert any of those two times, we're not talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The Saints won the football game.
They should have been up like 21-0.
Exactly. So, Zach, you said the best team won. The reason why I disagree real quick before we move on is because I think the Saints played an objectively bad football game.
Uh-huh.
I think the Rams played like the best game they could have possibly played. The Saints played poorly and still should have won the game. That's how much better of a team the Saints are. Is they didn't even play like 50% to how they played in the regular season, and they still should have won the game if the call was correct. And the Rams, the first interception fumble, that happened with Goff, the first like possession of the game. Other than that, Goff had a much better game than Breeze, and the Rams, you know, played a great game. So, like, that's why I think the Saints should have won, and that's why I think the Saints are the better team. But the Rams won. That's all that matters. The Super Bowl is the Rams and the Patriots in Atlanta this Sunday.
And with that being said, let's move into our preview. Oh, sorry, Chris. Let's into our preview. Chris, what were you saying before we transition?
I said go Rams.
Okay, perfect. Super Bowl this Sunday. I don't know what time. It's going to be like 12 hours.
6 o'clock probably.
Yeah, but
get up at 6:30. Dang it.
God, didn't it used to be? I remember.
Oh, no, it is 6:30. 6:30 it starts on CBS. All right,
sweet. Nice. We get Tony Romo. Yes. That's the first point I want to talk about, actually. I am here. I'm nervous.
That dude
is
a wizard.
I'm a little nervous. I'll make a point, and then you guys can go off on whatever you want to talk about here. This is my first point. My first note that I have in my notes is I am so excited for Tony Romo's moment of glory, his 60 minutes of football glory, or however many, whatever.
It never happened when he was actually playing.
Right. And so he's finally getting it. He's finally getting it, but my fear, my biggest fear, is the CBS producers are going to be in his ear all game, like, Tony, let's just ease it back a little bit. There are literally nearly a billion people watching this game around the world. Let's just chill. But I don't think Tony Romo's going to give a crap. He's going to be out there calling all these zone covers that he sees. And here comes Tom Brady. Oh, there's an audible. It's going to be a halfback sweep to the right. And it's going to be a halfback sweep to the right every single freaking time. I am so, so excited to see Tony Romo, or listen to Tony Romo commentate this game. This is his moment. What are your guys' thoughts on this CBS covered game?
Listen. I don't think this producer. I don't think the producer is going to be in his ear at all. I think everybody loves what Tony Romo's doing.
Yeah,
Stephen A. Smith was on TV saying, like, this man's a revelation. I've never seen anybody call a game this good before. Like, what in the world am I watching? Like, I don't think anybody's going to be in his ear. I think everybody loves the way Tony calls plays, calls the games, except for, like, trolls online that I've seen. But, like, yeah, I mean, it seems kind of like he was born for this. Like, Maybe he thought quarterback was his true calling, but actually being an analyst, being a color commentator on CBS, that was Tony Romo's true calling. And maybe coaching. I've seen people saying that, like, if Kellen Moore can be an offensive coordinator, I'm sure Tony Romo could do much better than that. So
yeah, fair.
Oh man, yeah, I'm pumped. They have Romo commentating the game. It's going to be awesome. I mean, it's like he's so much different than anybody else that does it, because he commentates as if he's watching it on his own couch in his own living room, what he sees. It's like, they're gonna run this route right here. They're going to slam right down the middle. Edelman's going to catch it. He's going to run for a touchdown. And it just happens like 2 seconds
later.
It feels
like he's in your living room.
And he's so passionate. Literally, yeah. He's like in your own living room. If you don't like Tony Romo, there's something wrong with you.
He's the anti-Chris Collinsworth.
I love it.
Collinsworth is like super like commercial and like very like generic. Mm-hmm. And Romo's like amazing. He's just
laid back.
Yeah, he's like super laid back, but he like loves the game and he's super knowledgeable about everything in terms of offense and defense. And he's great. I love Romo.
It was funny though, because like when they got rid of Phil Sims, it was like he was good already. And then they put Tony Romo in. It's like, okay, we understand now.
I got it.
Yep.
Yep. We got it. Not that Phil Sims is bad, but Tony Romo is just too good.
It'll be nice to actually enjoy listening to a broadcast of the Super Bowl, unlike last year with Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels, which is my least favorite broadcast of, well, the week of football.
Michaels is fine, but
He's fine. But I will say I'm going to miss Chris Collinsworth's slide-in, his weekly slide-in every Sunday Night Football. I'm going to miss it until August. So, I don't know. I love the lip bite he throws in. It's classy, real classy.
Jason Witten break the Pro Bowl trophy real quick.
What is this madness?
He's such an idiot. He picked it up from the top of the trophy and it just like snapped off.
See a Jamal Adams reaction.
Jamal Adams like, reaction. Oh, yeah. Freaking God. I'm gonna miss football so much.
Bad commentator. Jason Witten didn't do a great job this year. But let's off of that. Whatever.
Terrible. Yeah, good take. Good take. He was terrible. Hey, so before we get into the heavy revy, Super Bowl this Sunday. Halftime show is gonna be Maroon 5, Travis Scott, and Big Boy. I will tell you this, I've never heard of the name Big Boy. I love Travis Scott.
I'm ready to listen to that just because of the name.
Maroon 5. I personally like Maroon 5, but I'm still not. I'm expecting a very, you know, just a thrown in halftime show. I don't know. I'm not expecting anything big. Nothing for me personally is going to top Prince's halftime show. That was just so good for me years and years. I can't even tell you what year it was. I don't remember, but I just remember that was a very dope halftime show. Mm-hmm. And even just bringing it up right now, I'm like, there's nothing to talk about this. I just wanted the listeners to know in case you didn't know. Travis Scott's definitely going to come out and play Sicko Mode. We all know it. How they're going to incorporate it with Maroon 5 because it's all computer-based music, I don't know. But it's going to be, well, it's going to be a crapshoot. Let's just say that. I don't know if you have anything else to say about the halftime show.
You made a good point about your favorite halftime show. My favorite halftime show was the first Bruno Mars one.
Yes, that was good.
When Prince played, I think if it happened now, I would love it a lot more. My issue is that like my family like didn't really like Prince very much, and I was never exposed to Prince when I was a kid.
Right.
So I didn't really know who he was. I thought he was just some idiot who had like a weird sign as his name. I was like, who is this idiot? Yeah. I had no idea what like anything about Prince. Now I know he's one of like, you know, he's one of like the greatest artists of all time and all this nonsense. But you know, that's why. Yeah, Bruno Mars is my favorite though.
Chris, favorite halftime show.
I don't know if I have one.
Daughtry, the one a couple months ago.
They need to be on a halftime show. If Daughtry's on a halftime show.
I'm waiting for someone like the Foo Fighters or like, I would take Taylor Swift, honestly. It's weird that I went from Foo Fighters to Taylor Swift, but would take
Coldplay.
Coldplay would be great.
That was good.
Like Muse. And the Broncos, I don't know.
Panthers, I want Breaking Benjamin to do it. That'd be amazing.
Everyone would go to the bathroom. Nothing beats Daughtry. That's the issue. They wouldn't care. Like Daughtry or freaking like, I don't know. I can't think of it on the top of my head. But just like these hard rock alternative rock bands that we like and nobody else does.
Absolutely.
All right. This is a sports podcast. No one actually really cares that much about the halftime show. So we're moving on. All right, let's just get into it. What are your thoughts? Before we do picks, what are your thoughts, your analysis of this game? Matt, you start.
I start? Wow. Yeah, start. Okay, here we go. All right. So, okay, my basic analysis, I'm going to just basically go over the Patriots offense and what the Rams defense is going to have to do to stop them. Basically, it's not the most complex scheme in the world, but this is where the Patriots get you. They're so good at mixing up the pass and the run game. Tom Brady is so good at seeing what you're running, checking out of calls, finding the perfect play, to diagnose the play to beat your defense. The Rams are going to have to stick to Julian Edelman. They're going to have to double team and stick to Rob Gronkowski. And they're going to have to try to stop the run game. These are the three things they have to do. So they have to get up and they have to play press man on Julian Edelman, and they have to play press man on Rob Gronkowski. First off, this is going to allow Tom. This is going to make Tom Brady sit in the pocket for a little bit longer, which in theory should allow Aaron Donald, Dante Fowler, Ndamukong Suh a chance to wreak havoc in the backfield.
Sure.
Now we've said this 1,000 times about teams that have played the Patriots, and usually they just dominate and doesn't matter. Again, this is another – but that's what they're going to have to do. You know, they got to find a way to generate pressure with just the front four. You can't rely on blitzing. Tom Brady is going to pick that apart. So they're going to – you know, Aaron Donald's going to have to – you know, here's the thing, right? There was talk about Aaron Donald winning the MVP. It didn't happen. He's got to prove it tonight. He's got to prove that he's like the next – like an all-world defensive player, one of the best deep players of all time. Like he's got to prove that on Sunday. If he does, I think the Rams have got a shot. If he has like an underwhelming game, and Dante Fowler has an underwhelming game, I think it could actually be a blowout. Mm-hmm. It's Jared Goff's first big game, first Super Bowl, Sean McVay's first Super Bowl. I'm a little worried about this game. This is just another game for the Patriots. They've been here 1,000 times. If the Rams get off to a slow start, which I think they might, I think they will. And if that defense isn't playing very well, if they can't get pressure on Tom, if they play off, if they're playing zone coverage, I'm real worried. This might be 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. Patriots. You know, I think the Pats are going to win, probably. But yeah, I don't like the matchup for the Rams at all. Now, the only solid point for the Rams is on the outside, their corners are really good. They have Aqib Talib, and in theory, he should be able to lock down Julian Edelman. And they have Marcus Peters, who in theory should be able to lock down that slot receiver. So the big matchup to look at here is going to be the Rams linebackers versus Rob Gronkowski and the Rams linebackers versus the running back or James White, because he's the guy mm-hmm. who really does all the pass catching out of the backfield. If James White can get going out of the backfield, it's going to be a long night. But yep. if they're able to contain him, if they're able to get a couple three and outs, it's going to be a game. But to be honest, I've seen the Patriots. I've seen this story 1,000 times. I don't think they do it. I think James White gets going early on. I think Sony Michel is a pretty good day running the football. I think Rob Gronkowski makes big catches when he needs to. And yeah.
Well, to piggyback off of you, I was going to mention in mind about the corners. They have Aqib Talib and Marcus Peters, two physical corners. I see the Rams matching up pretty well against the Patriots on the defensive side. They have probably the best D-line in the NFL. They've slowed down Zeke and the Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram duo 2 weeks in a row pretty handily. It was almost non-existent, their run games. It really comes down to the linebackers of the Rams. Can they contain, or even the safeties too, can they contain Gronk? Can they contain James White? Because James White has proven in Super Bowls, it's like Super Bowl is like always his best game. Yeah. Every year, he always shows out in the Super Bowl. I don't know what it is. But one thing that really interests me is for the Rams on offense, their run game. Like now that CJ Anderson is coming alive, it's going to be interesting how much they use him and Todd Gurley together, or if they use one more often than not.
I was noticing during the game last week, or you know, the Rams Saints game, man, Gurley's great. You know, I feel like everyone's kind of afraid to point out weaknesses in guys' games, mm-hmm. but he's got the Le'Veon Bell thing where there'll be a hole there, but he won't really hit it. He'll kind of dance in the backfield for a bit, and then somebody will grab his feet and he'll go down. Whereas CJ Anderson, man, he'll get the ball and he'll just smash into a hole.
It's a bowling ball. Yeah.
He's just like, I'm going. Like, you can't stop me. I'm running in that hole right now, baby. And I'm running over my own lineman. I'm going.
Now, do you think
a lot of times it's better. You know, it ends up working out better for the team.
So. Mm-hmm. You think CJ might fit better with the Rams scheme on offense?
I think he fits better for playoff football. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be completely honest yep. with you. When the game slows down, it's harder to tackle people. You get less possessions. It's more about being physical than it is about right. having finesse. I think CJ Anderson just works better in the postseason. You know,
yeah,
especially he's healthy. He hasn't played all year.
Right. Exactly. He's the most healthy guy in the whole,
the whole game. He's the most healthy guy.
He's only the biggest X factor in the whole game.
Yeah, he really is.
Yeah.
You know, I think they got an opportunity to use him. My worry is that they're going to just try to stick with Todd Gurley, and it may work. Hasn't worked earlier in this, in the postseason.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. We'll see. Sean McVay is smart guy.
They have to establish the run early to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Establish the run. Let Jared Goff get some short dinky donkey passes to get him going. They got to do it that way. Unless they want to just start it off with a bomb and just be like, get the game going with something ridiculous, or just throw a pick. I don't know. One of the two.
Get the game off with a play action bomb. They can run the ball and then go deep.
Do a flea flicker. First play of the game, dude. Why not?
I can't believe that the Patriots did a flea flicker a lot in that game.
I loved it.
To try to end the game.
So much.
I was like, what are you doing?
As long as the first play of the game isn't what happened with the Broncos in, I think, 2013, then we're good. The snap from the center that goes over Peyton's head out of bounds for safety on the first play of the game. And then it went downhill.
Hey, they won a Super Bowl, though. Well, not year, but they did. You know? More than I can say about Cam. So.
True. yeah. You know, you made a point about run defense. Or in defense in general. The thing that scares me about the Rams this week is this. The Pats defense was 7th in scoring defense this season, allowing 20 points per game. The Rams were 20th with 24. And I know that doesn't seem like a lot for the common listener, but like there are some flaws in the Rams secondary. I don't know. Let me say this. I trust Sean McVay enough to have been watching the film, honestly, for the whole season, because one must know the Patriots are going to find their way to the Super Bowl. Or, like, I could see Sean McVay being that guy of, like, well, I'll watch Belichick's film just in case in, like, week three. Like, so yeah. I'm kidding, but you know what I mean. Well, probably not. I'm not kidding, actually.
Yeah.
But, I trust Sean McVay to know about this, that they are the 20th ranked scoring defense in the league, that they have allowed a high amount of points every game this year. The one, so you know, one can go with that, saying, "All right, McVay, you're going to bring it." But like we mentioned earlier, the red zone defense, New England, they have the advantage in this case. When the Rams get in the red zone, I noticed it last week. I don't know, man. For me, it's almost like, all right, don't worry, we're going to get them on offense. There's this mentality, like they struggle closing in the red zone sometimes. And that's against the average team, right? And not to toot the horn of the Patriots, but toot. Like, they are just not your average team. You know, this is – I don't know if the Rams – this is going to be a tough task for them, man. Not only that, we mentioned it earlier also, but the Rams allowed a league high, 5.1 yards per carry this year. The Pats have been ground heavy all postseason. They've relied on Sony Michel and James White and Rex Burkhead. I'm like, half the time I'm like, what are you doing here? Yeah. Then he scores the game winning touchdown. I'm like, oh, this is why you're here. You got to trust Bill Belichick's experience and the way that he makes his roster so flexible. He's had 2 weeks to prepare, which should give fear to any fan base upon facing Bill Belichick. And then my last point here, Aaron Donald, he's not going to be enough against this offensive line. The Rams running game is not going to be enough against the Patriots deep front seven. Any game plan by Sean McVay, it's not going to be enough. Patriots win this one. Tom Brady takes home MVP. Gronk walks off into the sunset after getting 2 touchdowns and 87 receiving yards. This is going to be another Super Bowl for the New England Patriots. You heard it here first. Definitely not first, because we all knew it week one. Yeah. But, yeah.
I want to say a couple things about that. Chris made a really good point before when he was talking about the Rams defense. You can pull out all the regular season stats you want, but at the end of the day, Ngakoue was playing selfish football. Aaron Donald was trying to win MVP. Dante Fowler wasn't there yet. Aqib Talib wasn't there yet.
Yep.
You know, now that these guys are playing their gaps, they're playing their responsibilities, they're doing what they need to do, they're shutting down the best run games in all of football. And again, the Patriots, it's kind of a myth that Tom Brady and the Patriots use the pass to set up the run. It's not usually that way. They usually use the run to set up the pass, believe it or not. They usually actually average more runs than passes in the first half of games. It's in that second, third quarter of where Tom Brady really starts to dominate games, because the defenses start to creep up to stop the run, and then there he goes. Again, I think they're gonna be able to stop the run, but I'm just worried about Jared Goff. I mean, that's where my main worry comes in. I mean, I don't know if he's ready for the opportunity. I think Jared Goff's very good, and I think he's gonna be a great quarterback. But I don't think he's there yet. And that's my only worry with the Rams. I mean, that's some worries.
Yeah. Even go, like, I noticed I noticed in the championship game that, I mean, maybe it was the way that they were trying to game plan against the Saints. And, like, I know we mentioned it earlier, but, or Chris mentioned it earlier, but if I feel like if the Saints don't get heavy on the run, at least trying it early in the game, they're going to have an identity issue that they had against the Saints in the first half, where that was the most frustrating first half I've watched from the Rams this season, because they were just like hands in the air after every play. Well, yes, the stadium was loud. One can accredit that to their issues, but they didn't know what they were for the first half of the game. And to carry that same identity crisis against the Patriots, that could be a real problem because Bill Belichick watches for things like that. He says that and says, all right, let's go pinpoint their secondary. All right, now let's go pinpoint their front seven. Let's go. So that could be worrisome for the Rams. It sounds like we're just attacking the Rams on all fronts right now. Yeah. We're only doing that because there are real concerns going into this game. And who knows? Like, yes, football is a game of inches. It's any given Sunday, you know, whatever cliche you want to throw out there. But if we're looking at the logistics, and we are a very logistical podcast, unless we're talking about Nick Foles, but listen, there's issues. There are issues with this matchup. Matt, it could be 21-0 at the end of the first quarter. It could be 35-14, which actually is closer than you'd think, but it could be 35-14 at halftime. Who knows? Could be 7-7 at halftime. It's just one of those games, man. Walking into it, the Rams could go up 14-0. I don't know, bro. Like that's what makes me mad about this matchup too.
I think it's crazy. I'm still shocked the Rams are even here. Like you said before, like in the first half, they didn't know their identity. They haven't even had an identity since what was this? Cooper Kupp? That's his name, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They haven't had an identity since he went down.
Yeah,
they
true.
They were a big play offense that relied on play action passes and then using the finesse run game. Mm-hmm. Cooper Kupp went down. They weren't able to get those short intermediate routes anymore. So when you can't throw it short, all of a sudden now safeties can play back and you can't throw it deep. So ever since Cooper Kupp went down, they weren't a big play offense. They weren't like this, you know, score a bunch of points. That's not what they did anymore. They were just like, we're going to run the ball a little bit. We're going to like run the ball a lot, you know, try to put points on the board. They didn't even have an identity. And somehow they're in the Super Bowl and they still don't have an identity. Like, I don't know what this team is. They're going to try to establish the run with CJ Anderson and with Todd Gurley, clearly, because they have to. They don't have a choice. And that's why I think they're going to lose this game at the end of the day. The Patriots have a pretty easy job game planning right now. You stop the run, you get Jared Goff in third and longs. It's his first Super Bowl, and you get some pressure on him, and he's probably going to make some mistakes.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a rocket science by Bill Belichick. He's had a lot harder matchups, like against Russell Wilson and that really, really good Seahawks team that they ended up beating. He's had a lot harder matchups than this Rams team. He really has. And unless, again, I mean, Tom Brady hasn't looked phenomenal. I mean, he's made big throws, but he's also made big mistakes in the playoffs as well that he's kind of been held out by. I mean, unless age catches up with him, I don't think it's going to. That's the only chance I think the Patriots lose this game. I have full faith in Belichick. If Tom Brady makes a mistake in the fourth quarter, like I think it was against the Steelers at the end of the regular season, where he basically threw a horrible ball that ended up getting intercepted, and the Steelers won because of it. Unless he makes a mistake like that, I don't see the Rams winning this game. And I'm going to actually go 35-28 is my final score.
Ooh.
I think the Rams make plays at the end of the game. I think Jared Goff's stats are going to be kind of like – they're going to kind of be like – you know, he's going to have like two or three touchdowns because in the fourth quarter, he's going to put up a bunch of points and a bunch of yards. But I think it's going to be like 35-14, like around there, like 35-14, something like that. And then we're going to get in garbage time and then the Rams will put up something.
That's a good point you made too. And I've noticed this about the Patriots, flipping the page a little bit, that they have allowed their opponents to kind of hang around. They did in the championship game. They let the Chiefs kind of hang around a little bit, and I have a note here that the Patriots' four Super Bowl victories this century, and again, that's a big, you know, demographic we're looking at, but still, they were all won by a total of 19 points. That's four Super Bowls won by 19 points total. They've lost three of those Super Bowls despite being the favored pick. So, and that's, again, we're talking about a whole century there, but that's been a factor with this Patriots team this year, is they've let their team, they let the opponent hang around a little bit. You might not want to do that against Sean McVay. I don't know. Yeah. If you're listening, Bill Belichick, you might not want to do that. But you're like, at the same time, like it's hard to say, I guess that's just what they do. But it's been a common thread for them this year. So
yeah.
I don't know. Don't be surprised by that.
On the same point, listen, as much as we're hyping up the Patriots, Zach are kind of hyping up the Patriots. If D4 didn't line up offsides,
Yo.
The Chiefs are in the Super Bowl, my guy.
Yeah.
They picked off Tom Brady. Like, I think the ball got tipped, and then they picked him off with like 40 seconds of the game left. Like, they would have won that game, but D-Ford lined up offsides. Mm-hmm. So maybe I'm giving them too much credit because I'm just used to seeing the Patriots win. Like, that very well could be what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Again, like I said, one guy lining up offsides basically changed the game from me running around my house like, oh, my God. Oh, no, there's a flag. That's exactly what happened when I saw the pick. But, yeah, I mean, maybe I'm giving them too much credit. I could be. And I could end up eating my words because I would like the Rams to win. It would be nice to see the, you know, new team win. But also I don't like the new, like, everyone's hiring 30-year-old coaches because they want to copy Sean McVay. Yeah. And I feel like if they win, every team in the world's going to do it. And there's going to be a bunch of it's going to be a mess.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know though. I mean, we'll see, but I'm sticking to my 35-28 Patriots pick.
Yeah. I mean, the Rams defense has to they have to play probably the best game of the season if they're going to win this game, because you can't doubt Brady in the Super Bowl. You can't doubt Belichick and the Patriots in the playoffs. So they have to play great. But we didn't factor in Tony Romo's Super Bowl prediction,
Jesus.
Which is actually going to be the right choice. He says, Tony Romo, the wizard himself, says it's going to be 28-24 the final, and the team that has 24 is going to have the ball at the end of the game and not score.
Okay, there you go.
So he didn't actually choose a team.
He can't. I was going to say he cannot choose a team.
Yeah, exactly.
So I was they'd like, ask him to step down from commentating if he did.
Yeah. Like, what are you saying here, Chris?
So if it's 28-24... and that happens, he's a wizard, more of a wizard than he is now.
I mean, he's a prophet.
Not really. That's very reasonable. Is that the Patriots score and they make the score 28-24. Jared Goff gets the ball about 45 seconds left and he throws an interception. I could absolutely see that happening. That's not like wizard. Like, that's what I'm assuming happens. 35-28. I think Jared Goff's going to get the ball, and then he's going to get pressure. His arm's going to get hit. He's going to fumble the football. He's going to throw an interception, and the game's going to be over. Like, that's the most likely scenario.
Yeah. So well, I do see it being a close game though. I hope the Rams win as much as they shouldn't be here. And I mean, the Saints had an opportunity in overtime. We'll give them that. But the Rams, they won it. They deserve to be in the Super Bowl. But I don't know. It's something about the Patriots every year. It just gosh, I can't stand them. But
what's your score? What's your pick?
I think it's gonna be close. I think they're gonna win it 30-27.
Who gosh, wins?
I'm hoping for the Rams. The Patriots are gonna win.
Zach, and then
30-27.
I gave stats. Yeah, Gronk's getting 2 touchdowns, 87 receiving yards. He's walking off in the sunset. He's retiring after this game once they win. Final score. Oh, biddy. I'm going to say 38-28.
Okay. Yeah. 38-28. We all chose the Patriots.
I'm going to go ahead and go with something like weird, like a weird score. I'm gonna say it's going to be let me think. Because I think it's going to be like – it's not going to be like only touchdowns. I think the Rams get a couple field goals. I think it'll be something like 34-27, something like that.
Nice.
Well, something that's not like an even number. Both teams are going to kick a couple field goals. They'll get stopped probably like at the beginning of the game before in the second half when the teams are going to like explode for touchdowns. But I'm going 34-27 Patriots.
Nice. You didn't know in my pick that the Patriots are having 10 field goals and the Rams are having 9. 30-27.
Every possession is like drive all the way down the field and kick a field goal. And
that'd be an awesome 30-27 Super Bowl. Right there. Like, that'd be so great.
Steven Goskowski would win MVP. You kidding me?
And Greg Zuerlein.
Oh, until man. He misses the tying one.
Greg the leg.
This is a tying one.
Somebody's going to get a 64 yarder in that game, break the NFL record.
Yep.
Just wait.
Who are your
chances?
Realistically, who are your MVP picks?
Tom Brady.
It's not even a question. It's always the quarterback.
Are you kidding me, dude?
Yeah.
Ever since that guy on the linebacker on the Seahawks won it, teams, they're like afraid to give it to not a quarterback. What was that guy's name?
Was that when they beat the Pats or the Broncos?
That was when the Seahawks beat the Broncos and he picked off Tom Percy Brady.
Harvin? Oh, no. Oh, I thought you were talking about something different. Sorry.
Picked off Peyton Manning.
Wait, what did you say?
I was thinking of a weapon that like totally went off on the Broncos. He had a great Super Bowl against us. That's just the guy
that beat the Broncos. Okay. I don't know. He plays for the Raiders now, I think. Malcolm Smith. There it is.
Oh, that dude. Get him out of here.
Picked off Peyton. Oh, that's right. I don't think they want to give it to, like, because Malcolm Smith kind of became a joke.
Oh, he plays for the Niners now. Yeah.
He's played for like six different teams. Yeah. I think they just want to give it to quarterbacks from now on.
I mean, if it's not Tom Brady, I think the favorite after him would be James White. I can see him having a good game. He always does.
Yeah. Fair. I'm just saying, if they win, they're not giving it to anybody but Tom Brady. Even if Tom Brady goes like 3 for 84 with 2 yards and 8 interceptions, they're going to give him the MVP.
Oh, it's a team win. It's the quarterback. It's all about the quarterback.
I feel like, and I think it'd be so, it'd almost be like Roger Goodell be like, hey, give him the trophy, because if we give him one more, it might let him say, oh, let's walk off into the sunset with Gronk and Big Bill, and we'll go off with this MVP only for Brady to come back in an interview like he already said and be like, can't wait to come back next year.
Yeah.
It's just, sorry, Roger. Like, you can't avoid. Brady's here for another, like, what do you say? 3 years? Something like that?
He said he wanted to play till he's 45. He said that.
He said there's 0% chance that he retires after this
year. That's all he said. Yeah.
That's all I heard.
Okay, so Zach, real quick, what's your MVP guess?
Well, mine's Tom Brady, but if we're going to go outside the box, I'll go with Gronk because of his 87 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, right.
Guys, it's not happening.
It's happening.
Very specific.
It may be 88 if he gets lucky, but, you know.
All right, so that's the...
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
When's your birthday?
It's in March.
Yeah. In March?
Yeah.
Before we leave here, well, let me say this. You guys, anything else to add real quick?
I want to ask you guys a question.
All right. I'll go back to this in a minute. Go ahead.
Okay. So going back to the beginning of the show, I wanted to ask you guys, as we're nearing the All-Star game, trade deadline, all that fun stuff in the NBA.
Ooh.
What is your most disappointing team of the year in terms of just like outlook of their franchise? I'm going to go first. It's the Detroit Pistons. They're screwed.
Oh, they so badly.
Everything for Blake Griffin. Do you know how much money John Lure is making on the Pistons?
Tell me.
Don't even tell me. $13 million. I was looking up.
For what reason?
I was like,
what has he ever done?
Richie Jackson makes over $20 million, and John Lure is making $13 million. I'm just like, this team is screwed, dude. Like, they're playing Blake Griffin over $35 million for the next 4 years. Andre Drummond's making like $28 million for the next 3. I'm just like, oh my gosh, they can't do anything. Like, at least like with the Heat, they can like move some pieces around. Nobody's like too expensive, but like they can't trade anybody. Like, they can't do anything. They're stuck being this garbage team for the next 3 years, and it sucks. Because I actually kind of like Detroit. I like Blake Griffin a lot. He's having a crazy good year. He's averaging like close to like 30 points a game and like 10 rebounds. He's going off. Mm-hmm. But I want Detroit to succeed. I like Detroit. I mean, they're the bad boys. They're a historic franchise, and it's good to see those franchises succeed and do well. Especially in the East, which is kind of, disappointing. I was looking over, like, salary cap a couple days ago, and it blew my mind how poorly that franchise is run. Like, I want to make a video, like, breaking down how bad that franchise is run. Like, oh, my gosh. Mm. It's hilarious.
It's bad,
man.
But, yeah, so that's mine.
Okay. All right. I'll name my most disappointing team. I would say the Pelicans are my most disappointing team. Yeah. The past couple of years, they've been pretty decent. They've made the playoffs, I believe, the last 2 years. Last year, they had Anthony Davis, DeMarcus Cousins, Drew Holiday, Nikola Mirotic. I mean, they were stacked. And all of a sudden, DeMarcus is gone. AD wants to get traded. They're getting to a point where, I mean, they could get a lot for AD, but if he doesn't get traded and he goes out in the free agency and they don't get anything for him, they're going to be in a really deep hole, you know. And right now they're 13th in the West, which is kind of unexpected even without DeMarcus Cousins, because they still play pretty well without him.
Yeah.
So
you think it'd be better?
Yeah, I don't think they're handling that situation very well. So they got to be my most disappointing team so far.
Do you know that Buddy Hield is the best shooter in basketball this year? He's the most
percentage-wise?
The most efficient three-point shooter. He's shooting like 45.7% or something crazy like that.
Buddy.
Like, Buddy Hield is going off, and I'm just sitting there like, that's exactly what it
means. I mean, the Kings are not bad this year, man. They're 26 and 25.
Yeah.
They're only two games out of the eight spot.
Yeah. But Buddy Hield, he was on the Pelicans. This is an issue I have with a lot of NBA franchises where they have a guy for a year out of college and then they're just like, he's not good enough. And it's like, you've had it for like 9 months.
Exactly. What are you?
So, yeah, I mean, if they still had Buddy Hield, I think the whole franchise looks different. Mm-hmm. But, yeah. What about you, Zach?
So, I don't know if you guys knew this because I didn't follow along with NBA draft night last season. But did you know the Atlanta Hawks gambled on draft night? By trading, Matt knows, by trading the rights to Lonka Doncic, like the man. Sorry, Lonka.
Luka Doncic.
They traded the rights to the man. Wait. Are you ready for who they got for him? And now I want to hear me out. Hear me out. It sounds good on paper. They got Trae Young and a 2019 first rounder. No laughs really necessary because it's like, all right, there's logic behind that. Until we realize that Trae Young has shot 24% from deep this year. That's a problem. This is a problem, people, that they could have had Luke Lonka, I'm going to call him from now on. They could have got Lonka truck like on their team, on the Hawks team, but instead they got a 24% shooting Trae Young and a 2019 first rounder that's not going to be Zion. Like, that's a problem, people. This is a real issue. I don't even know where the Hawks are in the standings right now. It doesn't. The Hawks, they're not winning.
They are they're the 12th team in the East. They're 16 and 34.
Jesus. Oh, my goodness. That's worse than I thought.
Hey they're better than the Bulls, Cavs, and Knicks.
So, Trae Young, he's also dead last among players with at least 100 attempts from three. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what the Hawks are doing as a team. I just know I feel bad for the city of Atlanta as a whole, because not only that, but now they have posters from Saints fans that are like, we got wronged all over their city. I don't think they care about all that. Not only that, but they don't care about their basketball team. So, just Atlanta as a whole right now, Falcons aren't looking too great. So I'll say my disappointment is just the city of Atlanta in the NBA. That sucks.
This whole entire city of Atlanta.
The whole city. Everybody. You know what's sorry.
About the Hawks? They traded a generational talent in Luka Doncic for the fourth best prospect on their team. I'm going to argue that John Collins, Torian Prince, and DeAndre Bembry are going to be better players than Trae Young. Like, maybe I'm wrong, but those guys are all good.
Yeah.
Like, those guys are all really good players. And then you got Trae Young, who can't do anything.
He's so bad, dude. It's his
first year. Maybe he's just like really overwhelmed. Maybe he'll get his shot to fall next year, the year after. But yeah, I mean, real talk though, John Collins is gonna be real good.
He's good.
Nobody follows Hawks basketball, but he's like one of the more impressive like young like power forwards.
He's been great.
He's probably their best player, to be honest.
He is. John Collins is good, man. JC's amazing. JC's the man.
So, yeah.
Hey, before we wrap up, though, since we named our most disappointing teams, I want to name our most surprising or teams that you didn't expect to be as good as they are right now. I'll go first.
You go. You go, Chris.
I'll go first. I mean, my first option would be the Nuggets, of course, since they're my team, but I'm not going to go there. They're nice. 35-15 though, second in the West, so yeah. They've been great this year. But my team here is the Brooklyn Nets.
Dang it!
Yeah,
Brooklyn Nets. I mean, nobody saw them being 28-24.
Spencer Dinwiddie is going off.
Spencer Dinwiddie, not only him, I mean, they have D'Angelo Russell going off right now. They got a lot of young talent there. Kenny Atkinson, their coach, is doing a really good job.
Yeah.
Nobody saw them being this good right now. I mean, did they even get 28 wins last year? Did they even get 15?
Nah, fam.
Last year. I mean, nobody saw this guy. I'm really impressed, and I'm surprised that they're this far. Yeah. Hopefully they keep it going. Spencer Dinwiddie, where'd he come from? He was like a scrub off the bench for how many years? And now he's like he's almost an all-star.
Yeah.
Awesome. And D'Angelo Russell has got ice in his veins.
And earlier this season, Caris LeVert was shooting he was shooting like 47-48%, and he was putting up like 20 points a game. Mm-hmm. And he was looking really solid, and then he went down with I think he like hurt his knee or his ankle. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's a really good a really good two guard for the Nets, who isn't even playing because he's injured.
Mm-hmm.
And they're this good without him. I can't even imagine what they're going to look like next year.
Just wait till free agents come.
When they get a free agent and Caris LeVert comes
They have cap room.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
It's going to be fun.
Yeah, the Nets are a good team. That's where I was going to go with, because I've read a lot about them recently, too. Unfortunately, I would say the Pacers, but
they're
really going to fall off now that Oladipo's injured. Mm. Also, I was researching his injury. It's really sad. That injury is like the type of injury that like Dwayne Wade would get. It's from overusage of the knees when your ligaments are so worn down that like the bottom of the kneecap and the ligament connecting that just snaps.
Oh no.
And this is a super rare injury for athletes, and guys don't usually recover from it very well. And it's really a shame because Victor Oladipo looked like he was going to be like the next guy. And it's looking like he might be like the next Danny Granger, like leading the league in scoring, playing incredible, gets hurt. And then is just like, hope not. But that injury is really, really serious. Like, guys don't recover from this very well. So I hope he can recover. I hope he's okay. Anyways, back to a better topic. The Bucks. I knew they were going to be good. Not leading the East.
Not 36-13 good.
36, yeah. So they're good. Way better than I thought they were going to be. Mm-hmm. Malcolm Brogdon's having a great year. Eric Bledsoe's – everyone that you think would be playing great is playing great on their team.
Dude, Brook Lopez.
Dude.
He can – since when did he shoot so well from the three-point line? I knew he could shoot, but
– what is happening? There's this – incredible picture with like Brook Lopez like six steps behind the three-point line and like Klay Thompson in his face, and he's just like, Klay, watch this. It's the way he shoots from like half court and makes it. It's nuts. Yeah, but probably the Bucks. Who's their coach? Is it Budenholzer?
Mike Budenholzer.
Yeah, Budenholzer. He's doing a phenomenal job. I like the team a lot. I like Brogdon a lot as a prospect. I like Bledsoe. I like Lopez. Giannis is playing great.
Chris Middleton.
Chris Middleton.
An all-star.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Playing great. Yep. So yeah, they're my they're kind of like my surprise. I knew they'd be good, but not this good.
Yeah.
So yeah.
All right, Zach. What's your pick?
Well, you know, it's been a lot that's happened in the NBA season, so I've got about two or three picks here actually. Right. I never knew this personally. But DeAndre Jordan can actually, like, do the free throws.
Yeah.
Isn't he shooting, like, 68%?
He's, like, almost 70% this year. Over his career, he's been, like, just over 50. Yeah. I don't know. That's a cool redemption story. But now he's going to New York, which is a real blow. That sucks.
He's going to get bought out.
Maybe he'll get paid $20 million to do nothing.
Fair point. Let's see. Let's see. Another one I had actually was, so the Sacramento Kings, I thought they wouldn't have a win at this point, to be honest. Like, I thought, like, I know we said the Cavs going into this point of the season they were going to be pretty bad. I literally thought the Sacramento Kings were not going to win a basketball in up until January. They're above 500, and like we said, Buddy Hield, De'Aaron Fox, they're doing pretty good. They're doing pretty good. They're like two games out of the playoff seeds right now. So
Marvin Bagley is a really nice prospect too for them.
They got a guy named, like, what is it, Nemanja Bjelica or whatever his name is.
Oh.
Yes, Nemanja Bjelica.
Okay.
I only know that 2K.
It's definitely a Bjelica.
It's silent. The B is silent.
But he's good. He can shoot. He's really good.
He's a good stretch four. Yeah.
And then my last point here, not necessarily good news, not necessarily bad, but Ben Simmons is 0-for-1 from 3 this year. I just want to throw that out there.
And it was against the Nuggets
he's still
half-court shot.
Yeah, and he still has not hit a three-pointer in his entire career in the NBA. I just wanted to...
In his entire career?
No,
yeah.
Never.
He's never
Where's
hit a three.
A point guard?
He's three-less. He's not threes.
There's this incredible video. I'm going to actually send it to you guys. If anybody's, if you guys are still watching, I want you guys should look this up. It's an analysis of Ben Simmons' game. It's on YouTube. It'll just say Ben Simmons 2019 analysis. It's a really, really good video that breaks down what he does right and what he does wrong. And there's two. There's a Ben Simmons one and a De'Aaron Fox one that I've watched. Ben Simmons, man, he's good, but did you guys know that he actually shoots lefty? He's a righty. Like, he's a right-handed really? Human being. He's not ambidextrous, but he shoots lefty.
What? The Blake Bortles of the NBA? Is this real?
And when he shoots, he curves his arm. He, like, curves it. Kind of like what I would, like, do, like, a joke shot where I try to, like, curve the basketball and then have it go in spinning sideways. That's how he actually shoots
it's
the basketball.
Like wanted, but in basketball.
Curving his hands as he shoots the ball. It's the weirdest thing. This is the problem with guys who go to college, don't try or learn anything in college and then go to the NBA, is maybe you should have worked at your jump shot in college a little bit.
Yeah.
So that you didn't get to the NBA and then look like a literal infant child trying to shoot a basketball.
Oh,
hot take.
He's phenomenal. He's got great court vision. He cuts to the rim. He can finish. He's like the best. He's the best transition player in basketball. Like, him and Giannis are like the two best transition players in basketball. But I mean, if you want to be a primary ball handler, you got to at least have some ability to shoot a mid-range shot, for God's sakes. Like, a mid-range. listen, I like Simmons. He's got a future. But if he doesn't learn how to shoot a basketball, he's not gonna be anything other than like a top 40, top 30 player in the NBA. Because going into that draft, and even watching him, you watch him play basketball and you're like, this man should be one of the best basketball players in the planet.
Right.
Like, he's that talented. But he just has such an inability to score the basketball from anywhere not in the paint that it's like, all right. Actual evidence.
Same, bro. It's a sick burn.
Yeah. I do recommend watching these videos, though. I've been watching a lot of these videos recently about guys, and it's really interesting to watch somebody who, like, is actually, like, a professional scout, essentially, and he'll break down, like, young players, what they need to work on and stuff like that. It's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah.
You guys got anything else today?
That's it, man.
I think I'm good, man.
Hey.
4 minutes? My Lord.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
When's your birthday?
It's in March. Yeah.
Listen, because I'm like honestly that good of a friend, I'm already an amazing person, but since I'm that good of a friend, I have a gift for you. It's through a vocal rapping. Not like rap, I'm not gonna spit bars, but I mean like breaking news. An hour ago, Nolan Arenado set a record for arbitration eligible player. The Rockies signed him. I don't know what their cap space is or their salary cap is, however it works in baseball, but they signed Nolan Arenado to a 1 year, $26 million deal.
He did ask for $30 million.
That's a lot of money for 1 year.
Yeah.
So good for Colorado.
Hey, I'm glad we got him back.
Another good year of great pitching and not so great offensive play. But I mean, it's going to be fun. I'm glad Arenado's back.
Murphy this year. So.
Oh, you got Murphy?
We got Daniel Murphy.
Ooh, I take that back. Might be some offensive
but
power.
DJ LeMahieu was going to the Yankees, so we lost him. But.
DJ. It's gonna do nothing.
I think we'll do a good job this year. Maybe make the playoffs again, but we won't win at all.
Happy birthday, Chris! Congratulations on re-signing a player that everyone knew was gonna re-sign. I just wanted to
early birthday
throw that out there. Early birthday, you know that's all I'm getting you this year. But
all right. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Hey Zach, where can they find us?
You know what's so funny about podcasts is you can listen to them, and the biggest question with podcasts is, where can I find you?
I don't know.
And you can find us on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Castbox, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, and
Stitcher.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.